This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always here in the early portion of the week by VSiN's managing editor, the one and only Adam Burke at Skating Tripod. So much to get to, ladies and gentlemen, here. Fresh off of a busy week 8, we got overreaction or market correction, Adam's updated power ratings, but let's start with the most important news from the weekend. They're bowl eligible, baby. The Bows are going back to a bowl, a 31-19 win over Colorado State, and it also got Jay Norvell fired. I take all the credit, me and Matt Eumanns. We started the good mojo, Adam. We went out to Hawaii. We brought them a victory against Stanford. And now they're bowl eligible for the first time in the Timmy Chang era. Go Bows, baby. Headed back to, I would assume, the Hawaii Bowl. And it just makes the holidays that much better if Hawaii is going to be playing in the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve, Adam.
Yeah, it really does. Also, what makes the holidays better is getting some Rainbow Authentics gear for your friends and family.
Look at you.
You know what? I mean, that was one of my favorite plays last week. I realized that when Hawaii travels to the mainland, like, it's probably kind of an overrated travel angle at this point. I mean, they're just accustomed to it. You know, I know that 6 hours to, you know, 6 hours to Vegas, 5.5 to California coast, whatever, 5 hours. But like, I don't know. I didn't understand why Colorado State was favored in that game. They're not playing well. They've got transition at the quarterback position now with Jackson Brousseau taking over for Braden Fowler, Nicolosi. And obviously we just saw Norvell get fired. That was one of the worst lines of the week, I thought, last week. One of my biggest overlays was Hawaii. So took the money line, happy with how that one played out. And I'm also happy with the fact that you didn't start with the biggest news being Notre Dame beating USC.
Oh, we'll get to that. And a tweet that went viral that I threw out there on Saturday night. Somehow, some way, me and all USC fans are aligned on something. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But yeah, I agreed with you. We talked about it on the Thursday podcast. The number just didn't make sense to me. And, you know, shout out to my guy, Timmy Chang. I'm sure we'll have him on. I think we're planning to have him on VSiN Primetime on Tuesday night as they head into a bye week. But it's been cool to see the rise and cashing a win total. So good job, Hawaii, over 5.5 wins. And another shout out real quick to Colby Dant and Joshua Nunn at Step on a Duck 1. Over the summer, they loved Southern Miss to go over their win total. And that is already cashed as they picked up their 5th win of the season. All right. A whole lot to get into, and we're getting into your power ratings here in just a little bit. We did see the end of the Sun Belt Billy era down at Florida, as Florida made a move off of a win, which was kind of hilarious, but they're heading into a bye week, so it does make some sense. Jay Norvell, as you alluded to, got fired. Is the bigger news the firing of Sun Belt Billy or the non-firing of Mike Norvell?
Ooh, good question. I mean, I guess I would say probably the non-firing of Mike Norvell, just because, like, Billy Napier has been getting fired for, like, the last, what, 2 seasons, basically.
Saved his job last year somehow, some way.
Right, exactly. And then, you know, this year they finally dropped the guillotine on him. I don't know. And look, Florida State got screwed at the end of that game. I mean, how there was no replay available, I, for the life of me, can't understand. But yeah, that team, like, they've not only have they quit on that guy, like, reports coming out after the game that they were making fun of him. And, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I feel like for the sake of program culture, like, you're better off doing it now than waiting till the end of the year. Maybe there's something better with his buyout at the end of the year, but like, now whoever steps into that job at the end of the season, because Norvell won't keep it, like, they're going to have a gigantic mess to clean up, as opposed to if you fired him now, maybe it would be a little bit smaller of a mess to clean up. So I don't know. But I mean, it wasn't surprising that Napier got fired, because, like I said, they've been trying to do that for 3 seasons now.
Yeah. So the statement that was put out on Monday from Florida State Athletic Director Michael Alford was, they are, quote, fully committed to Mike Norvell this season. And then they will have, I've never heard this, a comprehensive assessment of the football program will be completed at season's end. So, look, this is a Florida State team 5-14 since getting screwed over in many people's eyes and not making the college football playoff just a couple years ago. And the report that you mentioned from CBS Sports, after the loss to Stanford, a source told CBS Sports that players were cracking jokes in the locker room about having to respond yet again. Respond is a common phrase for Norvell to his team as losses mount. So, yeah, things not so going so great down there. I mean, are we going to look back, Adam, at Florida State beating Alabama by 2 touchdowns as one of the moments of the 2025 college football season in 10 years from now and say, how in God's name did Florida State beat Alabama? Because Alabama, you got to give them credit. They have now concluded a stretch of 4 straight games against ranked opponents, 4-0 in those games. And I believe, if I'm thinking accurately here, I believe 4-0 ATS too. Alabama, man, this team is a team that I loved preseason. And boy, I felt like an idiot after that week one loss. And now they're rounding into form. And I think they're right up there with Ohio State, Indiana, however, whoever you want to do your power ratings as the best teams in college football right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I, like many people, was pretty high on Alabama. I've always been a big Kalen DeBoer guy, and I really like DC Kane Womack as well. And, you know, I thought, okay, well, you know, with Ty Simpson, maybe he's just going to be a better fit for this Kalen DeBoer offense and what he wants to do. And I'm sure that was a big selling point for him in taking the job, you know, was, hey, we don't have to go out there and buy a quarterback in the transfer portal. We've got one that we really, really like right here. So, you know, to see them come out and play the way that they did against Florida State was honestly pretty demoralizing. You know, I had Alabama in that game. I figured they would be just fine, you know, expecting them to take that leap forward, and they didn't. And then, I don't know, maybe the team just kind of came together a little bit. And then, look, I mean, they played Louisiana Monroe, who's the team I dropped in my power ratings again this week. And, like, 73-0 to Monroe, like, it's not going to register for anybody. But it kind of felt like sort of releasing of the pressure to some degree, just going out there and completely humiliating a Sunbelt team and just kind of going, you know what? Like, let's just play, right? We're super talented. We're super athletic. Let's just let Simpson go. Let's let all these guys go and let's just go out there and play. And to some degree, they've been kind of freer and easier ever since then. And I think it's been a really, really good thing for this Alabama program. But yeah, it's definitely a head scratcher, especially if you consider the fact that Alabama's probably not going to lose the rest of the regular season. At South Carolina this week, the Gamecocks look really, really bad on offense. LSU at home. LSU is they're struggling right now. Oklahoma at home. Maybe John Mateer is healthy by then, but I still think Alabama wins that game. Eastern Illinois, which I feel bad for the Panthers there. And then at Auburn, and Auburn looks really bad right now. So Alabama should roll through the rest of the regular season with their only loss being that 2-touchdown loss to a Florida State team that, I mean, at this point, like, their schedule's not super, super challenging, but does Florida State even make a bowl game at this point?
I mean, when you lose as an 18-point favorite at Stanford, I think anything is possible. So they've got Wake Forest at Clemson, Virginia Tech, NC State, and then at Florida at the end of the season. They need 3 more wins. I mean, I guess they will be favored in 3 more games. They'll be a favorite against Wake, Virginia Tech, NC State. Man, I don't know. I think it'll be very much up in the air whether or not Florida State makes a bowl game, you know, moving forward. Look, 3 of their losses are, at this point, acceptable, I guess. You know, losing at Virginia, still unbeaten in the ACC. They lose to Miami. They lose to Pitt, who apparently is going to be a juggernaut in the ACC as well. And then they lose to Stanford. That one certainly unacceptable. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be quite the finish to the season. And you know, you got to ask yourself too, like, does Florida State, do their players even want to make a bowl game this year? So that, yeah, I mean, we're kind of getting to the point, Adam, where a lot of these teams, you certainly have to question their motivation, where they're at, and how are these teams going to respond? And, you know, shout out to Humans. He had Stanford plus the points on Saturday night. I wish I had tailed him on that one. I was a little bit too late to the party, because you had to realize Florida State off of three straight losses, weird travel, going to be a sleepy environment out there in Palo Alto. Stanford's a team that right now, they're not talented, but they certainly are fighting for whatever they're going to fight for. So are they a team? Look, I don't know. I mean, God bless them as they head down to Miami this weekend. But, you know, could Stanford be a little bit live doggy in some of these games? It's certainly possible. You know, when Pitt goes out there in a couple of weeks, I think that'll be, a November 1st game or something like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Florida State making a bowl game certainly does not seem like a slam dunk at this point.
No, and I mean, for Stanford, what was it, you know, a couple of weeks ago, they didn't play all that great at SMU, but, you know, they got that big $50 million donation from one of their deep-pocketed donors for the program. And, you know, I mean, that has to have some sort of trickle-down effect, you know, whether it's these kids who are on the roster hoping they can get paid with some of that money, or just the fact that it gives the program a little bit of momentum. And for Florida State, I mean, they have no momentum at this point in time. And you know, I also think something that's going to be interesting to kind of think about with Florida State as we go forward is Penn State was, you know, Penn State's buyout situation with James Franklin was a little bit different, but Penn State was willing to pay it. And if I'm a Florida State fan, and if I'm somebody who has some influence in that athletic department, I'm kind of thinking to myself, why aren't we willing to do it? Like, why are we willing to accept what's going to happen the rest of this year here? And it's going to be a massive coaching hire for them. It's going to be a very, very important hire for the, you know, near future of their program. But I'm kind of looking at, you know, some of these other teams that have let coaches go, you know, even rival Florida. And I'm going, I feel like we could find a way to get this thing done.
Yeah. I mean, you look around college football right now and the jobs that have not opened yet, Wisconsin has not opened yet. I mean, another disastrous performance for Wisconsin. The people that I was, you know, speaking to, I do a radio show up there every weekday. I think the buyout drops by a couple million if they wait till the end of the year, but is it worth it? I mean, they've been outscored 71-0 the last 2 weeks. And now, oh, by the way, you've got to go on the road this week to Oregon, where you're a 34-point underdog against the Ducks, who apparently Dan Lanning, they went the opposite way, right? They didn't feel bad about themselves for losing to Indiana. They got mad and they won by 46 against Rutgers. So kind of leads us into your power ratings, and we'll start on the downslide. I mean, this Wisconsin team, I thought they would be bad in the sense that their schedule is so daunting this year. I mean, this is a really, really bad football team. I know Billy Edwards has been sidelined the majority of the year, but I didn't really like that decision to bring him in regardless. Adam, what did you do with Wisconsin? Because things are getting really bad in Madison.
Yeah, 3-point drop for them for me. And look, I mean, not only have they been shut out in the last two games, they've scored 20 points in four Big Ten games here so far. The next closest is Purdue with 64. So, I mean, this Wisconsin offense is just historically bad for them. And the thing that's challenging, and I wrote about this in the intro to my power ratings update for this week, which you can read over at VSiN.com, is exactly what you alluded to earlier, right? You've got a lot of teams now that you're just kind of thinking, okay, like the talent's not very good, but also is anybody's heart still in it anymore? You know, Wisconsin, like if they get to 6 wins, it'll be a miracle. And if they do, they're going to be playing some bowl game that nobody's really all that interested in playing, you know? So like, what's the motivation for this team going forward the rest of the way? You think about a Boston College, right? Where I think Bill O'Brien is, they're probably going to have to make that decision this offseason. And I know that O'Brien took the job in Boston because, you know, it's a good medical situation for his family. So there are some emotional ties there. It's going to make it kind of difficult to let him go. But like, Boston College is another team, right? I mean, they're not going to win out. They're not going to make a bowl game or anything like that. So like, what is the motivation for that team going forward? There are a lot of teams like that where I don't want to get too low on them to the point where I'm laying, you know, numbers in the 30s like you have to this week with Oregon. But at the same time, like, is there any incentive for some of these teams to show up? And I think for Wisconsin, you know, while it's kind of ingrained in that blue collar mentality, all that working really hard in Madison and in the Midwest and everything, like, this team's just not very good. And so it just gets hard week after week to care, right? I mean, you're a college student, you're trying to have the college experience and all that kind of thing. Are you going to be giving max effort in practice or on game day? Probably not. So it's hard. You know, you can kind of quantify this, updating your power ratings based on, you know, the closing line of the previous game, how the box score played out, all of that. But it's impossible to quantify the mental side for these teams, like a Wisconsin, like a Florida State, like a Boston College, you know, all that kind of thing. So I had a really hard time updating my power ratings this week for that reason.
Yeah, and now you have a year where it's going to be a lot of jobs open, already a lot of jobs open, and where does Wisconsin fall on that pecking order? So they're going to have a big decision to make with the new head coach, assuming they do ultimately part ways. I don't know how you don't part ways with Luke Fickell at this point. So
and he's going to be a really, really hot defensive coordinator candidate out there in the coaching cycle as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Will he be the defensive analyst for Notre Dame when Notre Dame plays Wisconsin to open up next year at Lambeau Field? Sticking with the power ratings that you rolled through here, you mentioned Boston College, big drop for them, understandably so. By the way, they've got Louisville in a spot that I would love to fade Louisville, but I just don't know if I can get there in this particular spot here. By the way, Boston College, after losing to UConn, you've got Louisville and Notre Dame as your next two games. So that should be a fun run there.
Plus, they got Georgia Tech left.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech, which we can get to the rambling wreck and where their odds are to make the college football playoff. But a couple of teams I want to hit on from a bigger stature standpoint. LSU, you already alluded to this a little bit. Brian Kelly's team took another loss. First time they've lost to Vanderbilt since 1990. And the stat that we talked about on the podcast, thanks to Evan Abrams, it was the first time since 1948 that Vanderbilt was a favorite against LSU, and the Commodores took care of business and they won again. But this LSU team, you know, you think about week one, we talked about the win by Florida State over Alabama. Think about the win of LSU over Clemson. And Clemson, by the way, takes another loss as Cade Klubnik was out last week, and SMU quietly still undefeated in the ACC, by the way. But what did you do with LSU in your power ratings?
Yeah, LSU, 2.5-point drop for me. But this is a team that I've kind of been progressively dropping anyway. You know, I alluded to it a lot. The game against Florida that I just keep coming back to over and over and over again for them, where, I mean, DJ Lagway threw 5 interceptions. LSU scored 20 points in that game. Garrett Nussmeier had 15 completions. They had under 100 rushing yards in a game where they got 5 takeaways from DJ Lagway. Like, that was the first sign for me that there was something very, very wrong with this LSU team. And even though they're 5-2, you know, they beat South Carolina, they do have that win over Florida and the win over Clemson, this just isn't a very good offense. I think the defense is pretty good for the most part, but this is not a very good offense. And now you're taking on Texas A&M coming up. You've got Alabama still on the schedule at Oklahoma. You know, they'll still get to a bowl game because they'll probably beat Arkansas and they'll certainly beat Western Kentucky. But again, a team that, like, you don't go to LSU to win 6 or 7 games. You know, you don't go to LSU to play for Brian Kelly to win 6 or 7 games. And this is another one where, I mean, Brian Kelly's buyout situation is probably not very attractive for them. But this is another one where it's like, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do, because it's been proven in the transfer portal era with free agency that if you're willing to spend, you can turn things around in one offseason very, very quickly. At the same time, like, what do you do with these coaches that are just mediocre at best? You know, so really strange spot for them. 2.5-point drop. But again, this has been more progressive. This isn't just my first time dropping the Tigers. I've been doing it throughout. And again, I mean, South Carolina looks terrible. So even that win doesn't look that good for LSU.
All right, I got to talk Vanderbilt, because I certainly made my jokes when Clark Lee stepped to the mic, 2 years ago at SEC Media Day and said, we're going to be the best program in the SEC. He also said earlier this year at this year's SEC Media Day that we are built to play football in January. So immediately my, you know, brain was, all right, what bowl game is in January? Look, this team is good, man. They're 6-1 now. They're top 10 for the first time since 1947. They'll be hosting College Game Day this week as they take on Missouri. And on Friday night, when Miami lost, and we haven't really discussed that yet, Miami loses to Louisville as Jeff Brohm does it again as a double-digit underdog. Carson Beck's odds dropped to 45-1 to win the Heisman. He was around plus 350 down to 45-1. So I took a screenshot of the board at DraftKings on Friday night, and Diego Pavia was 50-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. And now he's down to 8-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. His stats are not gaudy, but 86 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, threw for a buck 60 and a touchdown. They beat LSU. I don't think he'll win the Heisman Trophy. Their schedule's pretty challenging down the stretch here, Vanderbilt is, as they have Missouri left. They have to play Texas, but it gets a little softened with Auburn and Kentucky. Could you make a case? Could you see Diego Pavia hoisting the Heisman Trophy in New York City in December?
I would have to dig this back up because I remember writing an article not that long ago about kind of the criteria for winning the Heisman Trophy. And it's typically in the realm of 40 passing touchdowns, you know, to be a quarterback and win the award. Pavia is clearly not going to get there. He only has 15 here so far, 4 touchdowns on the ground, so 19 total touchdowns. No, I can't see it. I can see him getting invited.
Yeah.
Especially because there's such a great story, but I don't think he's going to have the numbers to get there. And again, ultimately, like, you know, the question is going to be this, and I realize, you know, they were favored last week and they did win the game by a touchdown, but you know, there's such a great story as an underdog, and Clark Lee's been great in that role, and Diego Pavia has been great in that role and all of that. Like, now they're on the map, right? Now they're not going to be taken lightly. And I give Clark Lee a ton of credit because the thing that's really challenging about Vanderbilt, their academic requirements are higher than a lot of the schools in the SEC, if not all the schools in the SEC. So this is a hard program to recruit for in a lot of ways, particularly going through the transfer portal and finding guys that are not only talented, but also meet the academic benchmarks to get into your program. So this is a phenomenal coaching job by Clark Lee, to say the least. I think Missouri beats him this week, personally. So, you know, I think that would kind of throw some cold water on the Pavia campaign. But the numbers aren't gaudy enough. You're right. I mean, he's the leader of a team that's, you know, really surprising this season. But I don't think the numbers are good enough. He could get an invite, especially with the way that, you know, ESPN and CBS like to keep tabs on his family. I don't think that, I don't think he could win the award.
I would be surprised, but I mean, this year, man, no one's really running away and hiding, certainly with the Heisman Trophy. Your two betting favorites, Fernando Mendoza and Ty Simpson. Look, if you told me those two are the field, I guess I would take the field because it's mid-October and so many crazy things can unfold. But the way Ty Simpson's playing right now and Alabama's playing, I think he would be the bet that I would make. I'm surprised here real quickly because you're an Ohio State guy and this Ohio State defense is phenomenal and they shut out, you know, Wisconsin over the weekend. And I agree with you. They're the best team in the country. I was very surprised to see Julian Sain down to 4-1. And I guess it's just, hey, they're undefeated. They're number one. He's the quarterback. So we got to drop the number, but I don't really see the Sain for Heisman situation. Do you?
Yeah, I do actually. I mean, okay. This is a kid. So in 4 Big Ten game series, you have to throw an interception. So that helps, right? I mean, and also, I mean, they won 34-0 over Wisconsin. They were never in danger in that game. And honestly, with this defense, it's very hard for them to be in danger in any game. Julian Sain threw the ball 42 times for 393 yards. So I don't know if maybe this is Brian Hartline and Ryan Day saying, okay, you know what, kid? We trust you now. We weren't sure exactly what we were going to get coming into the season. They didn't trust him at all in the game against Texas where they just kind of grinded out a win. But, I mean, this is an Ohio State offense that's 51st in the country in yards per carry. That's not where Ohio State should be offensively in terms of running the football. But they do not have a Quinshon Judkins this year. They do not have a Travion Henderson. They don't really have, in my mind, a very good running game. And so they're probably just going to start using Julian Sain for all these easy throws. He's completed 80% of his passes this year. They're going to start using him for a lot of these easy throws as an extension of the running game because CJ Donaldson's not really it. Bo Jackson's had some big second half games and blowouts. James Peoples has kind of fallen down the depth chart at this point. I mean, Isaiah West was their leading rusher last game. Like, they don't have a bell cow. They don't have a go-to guy. And so if this is what they're going to do on offense, and it's just going to be saying playing pitch and catch to Carnell Tate and Jeremiah Smith and all these, you know, matchup nightmares they have on the outside. I mean, Saiyan might put up monster numbers the rest of the way in the Big Ten, to where he's already got 19 touchdown passes and didn't really do much early on in the season. Like, I think it makes sense, honestly. I mean, they protect him well. He's only been sacked 3 times. And the thing of it is, too, they're spreading the ball around, right? Like, Jeremiah Smith's having a strong season once again. Carnell Tate's only 15 yards behind him, 1 touchdown behind him, with 15 fewer catches. So I think those two are just going to kind of cannibalize each other. I think Saiyan, I'm not saying you bet it at 4-1 because there's just not much equity left in that price, but the way Ohio State's offense is running, yes, I think he has a very legitimate shot to win it.
Yeah, I do wonder whether it's fair or not. And Alabama has maybe not as talented, but is not too far back of talented receivers. For some reason, I feel like Julian Saiyan is not going to get the love because of Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate, even though Jeremy Bernard and Ryan Williams are pretty darn good too at Alabama. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I was surprised to see the number drop, but I think you made a decent case for why it is as it is.
Also, Ohio State's allowing 6 points per game. Right. So,
like, and the defense is just stupid good.
People are going to go, well, yeah, Julian Saiyan played really well, but you know, I mean, the defense allowed 6 points. I mean, they're not going to allow 6 points per game, I don't think, the rest of the way. Yeah, it's just, that's going to take away some of the shine from Saiyan too. But again, I mean, well, who else is really standing out though?
Yeah, it feels kind of like championship weekend is going to be the final closing arguments for a lot of these guys, right? I mean, a lot can happen, as we saw this past weekend with Louisville upsetting Miami. But, you know, if you look at Indiana, they've got a pretty clear path to making it to the Big Ten championship game. They play Penn State on the road. We'll see how that game looks. Obviously, Drew Aller is out for the year. They drop a rough one to Iowa, 25-24 over the weekend. But it kind of feels like Mendoza versus Saiyan. You're going to get Ty Simpson on championship weekend. Carson Beck's going to be playing championship weekend, even though he's, you know, after that performance, 4 interceptions, that his candidacy looks like it has dropped off quite significantly, and the odds would agree with that. Before we take a break, let's kind of put a bow on the power ratings. So we talked about some of the teams that you dropped. Vanderbilt, you bumped up 2 points. How about the cool story of UAB? And, you know, I was kicking myself because I looked at, and I said it on Thursday's show, Adam, I said, I want to fade either one of these teams, but I don't know if I can get on UAB. So instead I picked Florida Atlantic, and they did what they always do, which is fall apart late in that game, and South Florida covered the game. How about Chris Mortensen's son getting the win as the interim head coach, and Memphis losing to UAB as 24-point favorites? So I guess Trent Dilfer was that bad of a coach.
Certainly seems that way, right? Yeah, I mean, I gave you and UAB a 3.5-point bump here. And, you know, I mean, I also, like, there was some stuff in Jalen Kitna's past, too, that I kind of wonder if maybe the players, maybe it kind of rubbed them the wrong way a little bit, you know, having him there on the team, anointed as the starting quarterback, all of that. I realized that, you know, he was highly recruited to Florida, but, you know, they kind of rallied around Ryder Burton here, a guy who's, you know, was very emotional in his post-game press, or his post-game, you know, on-field interview, as he should be. Guy who's kind of bounced around, transferred around, all of that. You know, it's always cool to see those kids get an opportunity and, you know, pick up such a big win. And, you know, it's also a nice win for the UAB program with college basketball season looming, because it becomes college basketball season at UAB now, because they're right. Typically pretty good on that side. Andy Kennedy's got a really, really good team. But for them to get this win, you know, a good sign going forward. And you know, obviously, I mean, I don't know that Mortensen's going to get hired for the job. Probably not. But still, I mean, it makes him a much more interesting team going forward here now. And like you said, kind of speaks to, you know, Trent Dilfer and maybe how the situation was there with them. Do they win the game if Brendan Lewis gets hurt or doesn't get hurt? Probably not. But at the same time, I mean, you know, they ran for 219 yards, albeit 81 of them on one carry. You know, they threw for 251. They moved the ball on this Memphis team. And maybe Memphis just had a hard time rallying in game with the injury to Lewis. But, I mean, Memphis was there in the driver's seat for that group of five college football playoff opportunity. And, I mean, I guess they could get back in the driver's seat if they beat South Florida this week. But Brandon Lewis probably isn't going to play. So, and if he does, he's certainly not going to be 100%. So, very, very devastating loss for Memphis, but a great win for UAB. And again, another team that after firing a coach, now we have to think of them differently throughout the rest of the regular season.
Yeah, 7-point move, and we'll get into overreaction or market correction. Look ahead line was USF plus 3. It's now USF minus 4 at Memphis on Saturday. Any other teams, Adam, and once again, check out his full article with some early bets as well that you want to highlight, whether up or down in your power ratings.
Yeah, I think there's a couple here. You know, one team that I think we should talk about a little bit is Texas State, because they really don't look anything like I thought they would. You know, and last year they were pretty up and down. They were kind of inconsistent. I was like, all right, well, you know, like G.J. Kinney gets talked about for basically every job that's out there at this point in time, because he's done such a good job, you know, as an offensive coordinator, and then, you know, his first year at Texas State. But I mean, you give up a 40 burger to Marshall, and I realize Marshall is not nearly as bad as we thought they were going to be, which is honestly very impressive. One of the better coaching jobs this season at Marshall, where they've won 4 of their last 5 here, although losing to Louisiana is pretty bad. But still, I mean, their games are high scoring. They're exciting. They're a lot of fun. I'm not betting any unders in Marshall games the rest of the way. But for Texas State to give up 40 to this Marshall team, not a good look for G.J. Kinney. And it makes me wonder, are they having a hard time with player buy-in? Because now you've got all these different jobs available. We've talked a lot about kind of the premier jobs. You're going to get second-tier jobs that open as a result of people getting those top-tier jobs. Kinney's probably gone this offseason. So is that kind of factoring in with how Texas State is playing? I don't know, but I gave them a 4-point drop here after last week's performance. And they're a team I've kind of been, again, progressively dropping, you know, on a week to week basis here. And I don't know what's going on there in San Marcos, but it doesn't seem like Kinney really has a full grasp of this year's team.
Yeah, and headed to the Mountain West next year. So we'll see, the Pac-12 next year. I beg your pardon, is, you know, your typical Pac-12 situation. Just
also one other one, I guess. So the Matt Rhule year 3 bump isn't coming in Lincoln, is it?
No, it is not.
I dropped them 3.5 points. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's kind of all this outside noise with the Penn State job kind of impacting everybody or not, but, I mean, that was a line where the market wanted no part of betting Minnesota, no part whatsoever. Nebraska just kept getting into a bigger and bigger and bigger favorite role. And I mean, there's laying an egg, and then there's doing whatever the hell Nebraska did last week.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now. So the remaining schedule for Nebraska: Northwestern on Saturday, home to USC, and USC can't travel, so we'll discuss that a little bit more later. At UCLA, that becomes a little bit more intriguing. At Penn State and home to Iowa. Nebraska's win total was 7.5, and I bet it over. And Humans made sure to remind me that I believe it's 8 straight years Nebraska's gone under their win total. And after this loss to Minnesota, you're like, ooh, they got to go, 3-2 in these final 5 games. And none of them look like a walk in the park. Now, at Penn State certainly looks a little bit more winnable nowadays. At UCLA looks more challenging nowadays. And we'll see. But you know, I was also impressed by Iowa. I know they didn't cover, but Mark Gronowski kind of did what they hoped he would do, which is just run the football. Mark Gronowski, by the way, 130 yards on the ground and a touchdown, 2 touchdowns for Iowa as they improved to 5-2. So, yeah, we'll see if it's another disappointing year for Nebraska in the sense that maybe they won't get over their win total, which right now at 5-2 is far from a slam dunk.
Yeah, it's a little bit surprising, right? Especially when you consider the fact that their only loss, prior to the game against Minnesota, they lost by 3 to Michigan in a game that, you know, was kind of hanging in the balance. You know, but another one, like thinking about what happened back in week one and games that we're going to look back on, I wonder, depending on how the rest of this season goes for the Cornhuskers, that 20-17 win over Cincinnati in a game where the Bearcats really could have won that game.
Should have won the game.
That's another one that we may look back on if Nebraska's like 6-6 or something like that. And we go, man, I can't believe that one happened, because here's Cincinnati 4-0 in the Big 12. Scott Satterfield's team is making the year three leap that Matt Rhule's team doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, and a lot of people thought Scott Satterfield heading into this year was kind of a dead man walking, and they've been further anything but, and they've played really well so far this year. As always, check out Adam's updated power ratings over at vsin.com. Before we take a quick break, just a reminder, as we opened up the podcast, the hat I'm wearing, Rainbow Authentics, check them out. Got to be looking cool heading into the Hawaii Bowl later on in the year, but whether it's a game-worn jersey, signed ball, unique collectibles, you'll be capturing the moment and owning a piece of Hawaii sports history. Beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student-athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. I've been told there's some shirts in the works, so we'll see how that ultimately plays out, so keep an eye out on that. But I know the hats are still up there, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our good friends over at Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor this year of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, take a quick break. When we come back, a little market correction or overreaction, as well as some weekday game thoughts, as we are in the thick of weekday college football. It's the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm Tim Murray, at One Tim Murray. Adam Burke, at Skating Tripods. Adam, busy, busy time of year for you over at the website. We've got different betting guides coming out left and right. So what are the offers we've got over at VSiN.com?
Well, right now, and I think this is a really interesting offer, and this is something that's been pretty popular over the years here for us at VSiN, is our Sports Equinox special. That's out now for today. $120 through May 1st, and today being October 20th. The Sports Equinox is a week from when we're recording today, which is the day where all four major pro sports leagues in the U.S. and North America, I guess, are all at action. So you get a World Series game next Monday, you get a Monday Night Football game, and then obviously the NBA, which starts on Tuesday night, and the NHL, which has been in action for a couple of weeks now. So you get all four of those sports on the 27th, and that's why we have this Equinox special, $120 again through May 1st. So it takes you, you know, into the baseball season, takes you obviously through March Madness and all those kinds of things. So really, really good offer. And speaking of March Madness, I was very busy this weekend editing our content for the College Basketball Betting Guide, which comes out on Thursday. This time of year is just remarkably busy in so many ways with so many sports going on. And it's just crazy to think it's almost college basketball season, but it will be. That starts November 3rd. So our college basketball betting guide coming out Thursday over at vsin.com. You get all the guides with the Equinox special. You can try us for a month for $9.99, our introductory offer. See what you think. Pick up that college basketball guide, because you're not going to find any other college basketball guide for $9.99. So you can just think of it that way. But we're pumping out the content over at the website, man. It's just a crazy busy time of the year.
Yeah, it's incredible, man, what you guys have been doing, putting out all these guides. So, continue to say how much people need to grab these guides. All right, Adam, over the weekend, I was feeling pretty good as Notre Dame was able to pull off the win. And, you know, how about Circa? Not that they need my kudos or anything like that. They were the first book to go to double digits on this game, and they kind of just hung out there for 3 days. It went back down to 9.5, ultimately closed around 10.5, 11. So depending on what number you got, you either covered or not. But 34-24, the final score. This game certainly fired up a lot of Notre Dame fans, because USC and Lincoln Riley seem very hesitant to keep this rivalry going. But it is just worth reminding, and my tweet kind of took off and ran, that USC under Lincoln Riley is now 0-6 on the road against ranked teams. And then Evan Abrams chimed in on Saturday night. USC is 1-13 straight up in Central and Eastern time zones dating back to 2013. I know that's not all Lincoln Riley's fault. He hasn't been there the entire time, but it's pretty wild to see just the difference of a team that you get when they go on the road. And he called, Lincoln Riley called, just an absolutely disgusting reverse throw pass that led to a turnover, just a moronic play call, and Notre Dame able to get the win. And it's funny to see how many USC people actually chiming in and kind of voicing their displeasure for their coach, Lincoln Riley. I had the Twitter feed Inside USC, Scott Wolf, who covered USC for a decade or 25 years. He goes, maybe this is why Lincoln Riley and his suck up fans don't want to play anyone. Petro Papadakis, I know, chimed in a little bit too. So there's a lot of back and forth of whether or not USC should continue this rivalry going. And my rebuttal is this: you're an Ohio State fan. Ohio State is not scared to play anybody. They played Texas this year. They played a home and home with Notre Dame. Like, that's what college football is about. And it's fine. You're going to 9 conference games, and you should have a challenging non-conference game. And then if you want to have 2 layups, that's totally fine. But we'll see. I know my buddy Pete Sampson and Matt Fortuna on their podcast seemed to think it was headed in the right direction, that we will keep this rivalry going, which is just good for the sport. I know there are plenty of people out there, see, this is why you need to join a conference. The SEC and the Big Ten are going to band together and say you can't play Notre Dame. I'm like, yeah, that's how economics work. You know, let's avoid playing one of the biggest brands in the sport. But hopefully cooler heads prevail. But I think the bigger thing is Lincoln Riley overall, Adam, has been a pretty big disappointment at USC. And I thought he would go in there with the ability to recruit some of the elite athletes in that area, and I thought this program would take off, and it has not taken off yet.
No, it hasn't. By the way, Ohio State playing Alabama 27-28, and then Georgia 30-31, assuming we're not hit by a, you know, big comet or asteroid by that point or something. Yeah, you know, I mean, look, this is something I know Brad Powers has talked about a lot in terms of USC and their recruiting. Like, they're not really getting dudes in the trenches, and they're not really recruiting all that well on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, it's an overused cliche expression, whatever you want to call it, right? Defense travels. Well, maybe that's a big reason why USC has struggled, because they really haven't had a very good defense for a while here. And I think with Danton Lynn not really being able to kind of turn the tide in that regard after being so good at UCLA, maybe it's just kind of a systemic issue with USC at this point in time. And I'm not saying that they're going to fire Lincoln Riley. I'm not saying that another high profile job is going to be available, but it is something that you do have to evaluate and something that you do have to think about going forward. And of course, by the way, they're on the road at Nebraska after this bye week here this week. But the other thing for USC that I think is important to point out here, and they play Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa, Oregon, and then UCLA in the rivalry game the rest of the way. The big concern that we had, and, you know, Jonathan Von Tobel will speak to this if you let him. He'll be on a soapbox for a long time. When they brought in Jaden Maiava, and then they also made the decision to use Jaden Maiava over Miller Moss, who, of course, went to Louisville and just helped orchestrate the upset win over Miami. Maiava's big issue at UNLV was putting the ball at risk. He was kind of a YOLO quarterback where he'd throw a lot of turnover-worthy passes. The last 3 games here for USC, and they've lost 2 of them, Maiava's got a 6-5 touchdown interception, or 6-4 touchdown interception ratio. 2 picks in the game against Notre Dame, 1 in the game against Illinois, 1 in the game against Michigan. So, you know, now that they've kind of stepped up in class a little bit here, we're sort of seeing the Jaden Maiava that we thought we were going to get. When you factor that in with a defense that's just pedestrian, I think would be a safe word for it, it's a problem. It's a problem going forward here for this team. Not that Maiava is going to be the quarterback next year, but they're just not getting the same dudes that they were. And, you know, I mean, it was, I think as an offensive player, you know, a few years ago, you'd have been thrilled to play for Lincoln Riley and think about what he's able to do for your career, what he does in terms of guys that contend for the Heisman Trophy, stuff like that. But if you're a defensive player, you're not really looking at going to USC. And I think that's something that's been holding this program back for the last few years.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say Notre Dame has the best duo of running backs in the country. I gave the nod to Nicholas Singleton and Catron Allen preseason. Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love put on an absolute show on Saturday night. Price, 87 rushing yards, a touchdown, also a kickoff return for a touchdown when Notre Dame was down 24-21 in the third quarter. And Jeremiah Love, that was the best game of his career. I know he had the big run against Indiana in the playoff. He had that, you know, miraculous touchdown against Penn State. He's had some, you know, leaping over defenders, but that dude was on another level on Saturday night. And USC guys were talking smack, and, you know, that's what's great about a rivalry game. He ran for 228 yards, averaged 9.7 yards per carry. He had, I think, five or six catches as well for 37 yards. So he was phenomenal. And I don't think he'll win the Heisman Trophy because, it, you know, I know Ashton Gentry finished second last year, but Ashton Gentry ran for 2,600 yards. Jeremiah Love's not going to get to that level. Also, Notre Dame, we'll see how many high-profile games they have moving forward. I know Navy's still undefeated. Pittsburgh might be ranked by the time they play them in the middle of November, but that was a show that he put on, and that was impressive. By also the offensive line, got to give Notre Dame's offensive line credit, because they, in the rain, Adam, they said, we're just going to run it down your throat and you can try to stop us, and they did not stop them.
That's what you got to do, right? And also, I mean, you know, to the point you were making about people saying, oh, Notre Dame needs to join a conference, they started 0-2. They're minus 320 to make the college football playoff now. Why would you ever want to join a conference if you can kind of set things up that way? I realize that both of their losses were close games. And, you know, you texted me when we talked about Miami and, you know, Mario Cristobal doing what he does. And you were like, yeah, you know, it's not really a great thing for Notre Dame. But, like, they have two losses by 4 points to teams that, I mean, at least one of them is going to play in the conference title game in all likelihood. Maybe Texas A&M can get there. I don't know. But, I mean, there's no reason for them not to run the table with the five teams they have left to play and get into the college football playoff. And quite frankly, with CJ Carr no longer an unknown, with a defense that's still really good and that running game, I don't want to run into Notre Dame if I'm in the college football playoff. So this team, and credit to Marcus Freeman for what he's been able to do, but this team, I know they lost a couple of coin flippy games early, but I mean, they look really, really good right now. And, you know, just to circle it back to my power ratings real quick, Notre Dame is number six in the country for me, and it's not going to take much for them to get into the top five.
And I've talked to some people that have them as high as number three. So, yeah, you know, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out. Obviously, like last year, because of the loss to NIU, they had no wiggle room. No wiggle room again this year for the Irish. And, you know, a couple games where they'll be massive favorites but could be tricky. At Pitt is the game where, you know, I don't think they're that good, but the quarterback change has certainly changed things up for Pitt here. A couple notes I just wanted to point out regarding what unfolded in week eight. You mentioned Louisville. The market loved Louisville by Friday night. That number went down to like 10.5. Jeff Brohm, I mean, it's ridiculous what this guy has done. He's now 4-0 straight up against top five teams, which is just insane to think about. He was at Purdue and Louisville. And then you think back to some of the big wins, whether it was Ohio State in 2018, Purdue in 2021. This dude just, he thrives in the underdog role. And, you know, Matt and I were talking about it because I had Louisville on a money line parlay a couple weeks ago against Virginia, and they lost that game even though the box score was kind of all wacky. For whatever reason, Jeff Brohm thrives in this underdog role. His teams get the best out of him. I think Miami's still fine, but what is your big picture thought on Miami? They're still a favorite, minus 270 to make the playoff. They were minus 2,000 last week, so it took a little bit of a hit, but I think Miami's still a pretty darn good team. And Carson Beck just played a horrendous game. Didn't love him kind of throwing his wide receiver under the bus post game on that fourth interception, but I still think Miami's a team to keep an eye out on. I'm not going to sell all my shares of Miami despite the loss on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're minus three in turnovers, like, you know, these are the things that happen. And so there are some things that Miami definitely needs to fix up here. But It's so weird that they've only played two conference games. Them and North Carolina have only played two conference games. Everybody else has played three or more. And I mean, the rest of the SMU game now becomes really, really interesting because you mentioned it, SMU kind of quietly undefeated here in conference. Rhett Lashley's team got off to a pretty slow start, I would say, you know, losing to the two Big 12 teams, but you know, they've been just fine now in conference play. And honestly, you know, Clemson, I know Cade Klubnik didn't play and people are going to talk about that, but that wasn't the issue for Clemson. I mean, their backup quarterback threw for 317 and three touchdowns. That wasn't Clemson's problem. Clemson's problem was defensively. They didn't play very well. So, you know, the Miami SMU game becomes really interesting down there in Dallas. Is it a good thing that Cristobal kind of had his Mario Cristobal moment this early to allow them to maybe rattle off, you know, six in a row to end the season? And then all of a sudden, you know, we just kind of think, ah, well, it happens, you know, because if Cristobal does this later in the year, it's much more problematic. Now they at least have a chance to kind of overcome it. I still think they're a really, really good football team. You know, again, they four interceptions, only gave up 24 points. Like that's their defense is still very, very solid. I think they still make the ACC title game, and I think they still have a good shot at the college football playoff. But obviously, again, with Mario Cristobal, it's always going to cause you to think twice.
They're plus 240 right now to win, or plus 280, I beg your pardon, to win the ACC. They do not control their own destiny. That's why you have that number as high as it is. Georgia Tech is unblemished in conference play. Credit to them. I was on Duke market. Agreed, and then you fumble the ball at the one-yard line going in on the opening drive of the game, and it's like, all right, that's how this game's going to unfold. But Georgia Tech, I'll give them credit, all kidding aside. I thought their defense in the second half was suffocating on the Blue Devils, and that was an impressive win by Georgia Tech on the road at Duke. Their schedule is very favorable. The reason Georgia Tech's the betting favorite is because there is a path that Miami does not make the ACC championship. If Miami's playing Georgia Tech in the ACC championship, I don't know what's that number right now? Seven on a neutral, maybe even higher?
Well, let's see here. Miami's an 84. I have it 8.5.
Yeah.
Yeah, 8.5.
Yeah, so.
For now. Obviously, it could change.
There's I need to look more into the pathway before I make a bet, but that one is jumping out a little bit to me. But obviously, Miami would need some help in order to get into the ACC championship.
Well, game. I mean, If Miami beats SMU, right, then they control their own destiny, you know, because Virginia and Georgia Tech
are both undefeated and they don't play each other.
Virginia's not going to run the table.
I don't think so either, but I'm just pointing it out that
right.
I agree, but there is a pathway. I mean, I'll be honest, man, Virginia plays UNC this weekend as a 10-point favorite. They play at Cal. They play at Duke. Like, Virginia's going to lose a game down the stretch.
I think Wake Forest could even beat them in Charlottesville. I think Wake Forest is really, really improved. Extremely improved.
Got a good, I mean, that was a really intriguing hire that they made. And Wake Forest home to SMU this week. So we'll see ultimately how that plays out. I wanted to throw this your way just before we kind of look at some of the overreaction or market corrections here. This is the current. Actually, I want to do this first because I just saw that DraftKings had it. ACC over or under 1.5 playoff teams, over minus 190, under plus 155.
Under.
Big 12 over under 1.5. We haven't talked about that. Texas Tech, who looked unbeatable, loses to Arizona State. Leavitt comes back. They win that game 26-22. Over under 1.5, under minus 180, over plus 140.
Well, okay, so if we kind of hash this out, right? Big Ten's probably getting three teams. SEC's probably getting three teams, right?
At minimum. Their number's sitting at 3.5.
Yeah. Oh, so for SEC?
SEC's 3.5 juiced over minus 280. Big Ten is 3.5 juiced under minus $3.
Okay. Yeah, so Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And then SEC would be Alabama, Georgia. God, I mean,
it could be a lot of different teams.
Who's the fourth?
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, could be, I guess. I mean, Texas A&M still hasn't lost yet. I don't know if that's going to continue, but they haven't lost yet.
Yeah, you've got A&M, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss. I mean, Texas, if they were to run the table, they would be in.
How good is Ole Miss?
Right?
Because, I mean, Georgia, like, that game says 43-35. It wasn't that close.
All right, but, let's look at it this way. How good is Ole Miss? Fair question to ask. That also being said, this is their schedule. At Oklahoma, South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, at Mississippi State. If they're 10-2, they're getting in.
Tough game against the Citadel. I don't know if they can. I don't know if they can win that one. I mean, I have them a 2-point dog against Oklahoma this week, but John Mateer didn't look good at all against South Carolina.
That defense is so good, man.
South Carolina can't do anything on offense, but yeah, Oklahoma's defense is really, really good, which. I mean, it's really weird, right? Because Lane Kiffin always finds a game to lose where the point total's in like the 70s or 80s. And like, then you sit there and look at good defenses against them and you're like, maybe this will be what stops them. And then all of a sudden the Rebels defense plays really well and they win like 24-21. I love Lane. It's just, his team
is so
crazy.
Did you see him making the joke on the sideline when he was doing the timeout? And he said, no, I was clapping.
Yeah. That guy's a character, man. Joey Freshwater. What a character. I don't know what Florida is by week 12. They get a bye before the Egg Bowl, where Mississippi State probably covers, but they probably don't win the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, that game feels what they do. Like it's going to be kind of a weird, clunky game, right? So,
right.
I mean, the cowbells are going to be ringing nonstop down there. I'll definitely be probably looking at Mississippi State, especially if we get north of a touchdown against Ole Miss.
There's also so many, I mean, the politics involved in the whole thing, right? I mean, I don't know if there's any animosity between NCAA and the SEC and the Big Ten who want to kind of split off and do their own thing. So, like, I don't know if maybe they would hold that against them and only take 3 from each conference instead of maybe 3 and 4. I don't know. But, like, again, the Big 12 is one of those conferences where they're going to cannibalize each other the rest of the way in some way, shape, or form. And we just saw it with Arizona State. They get hammered by Utah in a game where Sam Levitt doesn't play, but defensively they looked awful. And then Texas Tech they beat when Baron Morton doesn't play. So, you know, that conference just like no one's reliable enough, I don't think. So, man, I want to say 1 for now, but I feel like you've got to get 2 from one of the ACC or the Big 12.
Yeah, you look at the Big 10. Unders -$3. I'm not telling anyone to go out and lay -$3. I don't know who that fourth team would be. I mean, it's
nobody.
Indiana is -2,500. Ohio State isn't even listed right now on the odds that I'm looking at to make the playoff. Oregon's -$4. Those three teams, are getting in. I mean, barring Oregon getting upset by someone. I feel very confident in that. But yeah, it's going to be, I think we're in store for some wackiness down the stretch. And, you know, the ACC is intriguing, -190 to the over. Miami feels, even though they lost, comfortable in making the playoff, but will they win the ACC championship? I mean, that's the thing you're banking on, right? If Miami doesn't make the ACC championship, here's a pretty interesting question, Adam. And I think I know the answer. Georgia Tech goes into the ACC championship 11-1 with only a loss to Georgia and then gets smacked by Miami. Do they still get in? I think they probably do at 11-2. And I think the precedent was set. We don't want to penalize teams for playing in a conference championship, but we could have another one of those situations where Georgia Tech, what if they're 10-2 and then lose to Miami? That could be pretty fascinating as well. So Georgia Tech's a pretty interesting team to look at because their final regular season game is against Georgia. So I don't know if we just assume that's a loss. I know they went to 97 overtimes a year ago, but that'll be a pretty fascinating ending to the season with the rambling wreck.
Well, then you run into the issue. I mean, I guess they did beat Duke, right? Are we going to get into a position where by the end of the year, Duke is Georgia Tech's best win? Like, they beat a ranked Clemson team in the top 15, but Clemson, like, they're trending towards 6-6 right now.
Right.
So, I don't know. Does Georgia Tech deserve it if their best win is Duke? I don't know. I mean, I guess that kind of depends on what happens with the Big 12, right? So,
yeah. It is.
Okay. So I think the better question is, right? Let's say Georgia Tech goes 11-1, right? They lose to Georgia. They beat Miami. Does Miami get in?
What's the record for Miami would be what? 11-2.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So we assume that Miami, especially with the one ACC loss, they can't lose the rest of the way. Right. So Georgia Tech beats Miami in an 11-1 battle in the ACC championship game. Does Miami get in?
Well, you have to put Miami in, Notre Dame.
Do you?
I mean, what's the point of playing football games if a head-to-head for two lost teams doesn't matter as a tiebreaker? And I know there's a lot of different criteria, but I don't know how you put in an 11-2, a 10-2 Notre Dame in that situation over an 11-2 Miami. I think Miami with also, you got to remember this, Miami also has a dominant win over South Florida, who is currently plus 120 to make the playoff as well. So I think the non-conference is going to help out Miami a lot because they beat Notre Dame and they beat South Florida. And if the playoff committee wants to avoid teams doing what Indiana does, which is play nobody and then just play conference games, you got to give them credit for beating Notre Dame and not give Notre Dame the head-to-head, not get Notre Dame in. Now, I we're a long ways from that coming to fruition, but I think that would be a scenario where you'd have to put in Miami over Notre Dame.
Well, I mean, it kind of plays into what we talked about earlier, where Notre Dame's minus 320 to make the playoff, right? Because if that's what it comes down to, and there is a path for it to come down to that, you know, is minus 320 too high? I mean, is there, you know, a two-way market we can take a look at here where you could play the no on Notre Dame? You know, I don't know if that's something that you would want to do, because again, there's obviously so many.
No is plus 260.
Would you make that bet?
I think there's a path. You know, it was minus 110 both ways prior to the USC game. I think the odds that Notre Dame makes the playoff are good, but I think there are scenarios where they get boxed out. Yeah. Also, let's say Texas A&M falls apart down the stretch, or Texas A&M is 10-2. Like Notre Dame right now, Adam, they want Miami to win the ACC and they want Texas A&M to win the SEC because then they're both in. They don't want a situation where 10-2 Texas A&M is going head-to-head with Notre Dame because that happened and Notre Dame won or lost the game. So I think there is a scenario, and I think plus 260. I'll be honest, man, I don't know if you have to place the bet right now. You kind of wait and see how things play out. Notre Dame doesn't play this weekend. They're going to be a double-digit favorite in every game moving forward. So I think there's an avenue potentially brewing where Notre Dame has a chance to get boxed out. Is it likely? No, but I think it's possible because their best win, to your point, if you want to play the best win game, Notre Dame's best win is going to be USC, who is unranked right now, and who knows how the season unfolds for the Trojans. I mean, are they going to go to the table and say, hey, we beat Navy, who is, you know, a 10-2 American team, or we beat Pitt, Pitt has a ugly, well, they lost to West Virginia. So like, there's a lot of holes to potentially poke in a Notre Dame scenario. So do I think they'll get in? Probably, but at plus 260 on the no, it's not the worst look in the world.
Yeah, I think like what I'm kind of driving towards here is I think it's really, really hard to lay juice and specifically significant juice in this college football playoff yes-no market because the sport is just so high variance at this point in time. There's so many different ways that things can go, right? Like maybe Miami losing just kickstarts them, you know, for some reason, screwing up in multiple places, right? And then all of a sudden, like, that loss that Notre Dame has continues to get worse and worse and worse on a weekly basis. So I honestly, like, I think if you want to look for some of these things, you're kind of looking more at the plus money long shots and kind of hoping you could take a little bit of a gamble as opposed to laying any kind of number on these things, because it's just, there are so many ways that these things can get effed up in college football that, like, even Oregon minus 400, I'm not interested in laying, right? Like, it should happen, but even that, I'm not interested in laying. So, you know, just I think it's hard to bet into the futures market in college football unless you're doing it kind of preseason or like doing an in-season, you know, conference champ, something like that. I think the playoff, there's just way too many variables that come into play.
All right, let's wrap on this, Adam. As I do every week, I take a look at the look-ahead lines that are put out by our guy Matt Grill over at DraftKings, and then I compare them to where we're at for the market. So a couple of games that jump out, we hit on one. The biggest move was South Florida, Memphis. South Florida was +3 last week. Memphis now +4. So a 7-point move in this game. Both teams, Memphis loses to UAB as a massive favorite. USF beats Florida Atlantic. But I think the caveat here, as you pointed out in your power ratings article, is the quarterback situation at Memphis and the injuries. So I would have been interested in Memphis here on this, but I think this is a market correction because of the injury to Brendan Lewis.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, the optics aren't great of losing to UAB, but you know, with Brendan Lewis out, I mean, you know, again, and this is a Memphis team. I've talked about this many times over on the show. I was really, really slow to adjust them because Brendan Lewis didn't do anything special at Nevada. There was nothing that, you know, with that FedEx money at Memphis, I was like, I don't know why they targeted this guy. And then all of a sudden he was playing really well. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I get it. And I kind of reluctantly started to move them up. Now with him out, I mean, I don't think he's going to play. This line kind of implies he's probably not going to. And then the line probably keeps going up from there. But this kid's way more important to this team than I thought he would be. So definitely a market correction in regards to his injury for sure.
Let's go to a couple SEC games. Ole Miss was +2.5 last week at Oklahoma. That number is now to 4.5 or 5. Ole Miss loses. Oklahoma wins. Oklahoma's defense is dominant. I'm kind of curious here on Ole Miss. I'm going to wait and see how the market shapes itself. I don't think there's any need to take 5 because we'll see how things unfold. But I'm curious if Oklahoma has enough firepower to maybe keep up with this Ole Miss squad. But that defense is real and spectacular.
Yeah, good reference too, by the way. I mean, John Mateer only ran 8 times against South Carolina. Didn't really need to, I guess, but only ran 8 times for 14 yards, only threw for 150 yards. He's still not right. And this is a game I'm going to be really interested to see, you know, the athleticism, the speed, the dual threat nature of Chambliss against this Oklahoma defense, because statistically their profile is very, very impressive, right? Now, some of it being carried by blowing out Temple, blowing out Kent State, you know, that kind of helps their overall numbers. But Texas, Arch Manning is not it, as we've talked about many times over, as many people have talked about many times over. South Carolina's offense is bad. They're really bad on offense. They need to change the offensive coordinator. Mike Shula is not it. Michigan, Bryce Underwood's first road start, right? And Michigan's offense is kind of limited to some degree anyway. Oklahoma has not seen an offense remotely close to this yet. So this is a big litmus test for their defense. I kind of like Ole Miss in this one too. Again, I'll kind of wait and see where the number goes, but I don't think Mateer is 100%. I don't think they're super confident in him, you know, having to run the football or throw it down the field. And Ole Miss is fast. They're talented. Find me an offense that's anything like Ole Miss's that Oklahoma's faced. I think this is an overreaction for sure.
Texas A&M heads to LSU. The look ahead was A&M +1.5. Now it's 2.5 or 3. Circa and the Westgate Superbook have both popped 3s here. LSU loses to Vanderbilt. Texas A&M gets the win, backdoor cover by neck brace Bobby against A&M there. Market correction or overreaction? Flip of favorites here, Texas A&M at LSU.
I think this one's right. I think this is a market correction here. I mean, LSU, they just, again, they really haven't shown anything impressive to me for the majority of this season here. I mean, I just sang the praises of Ole Miss, so maybe that 24-19 loss kind of looks a little bit better. But if you look at that game, Ole Miss outgained LSU 480-254. Ole Miss left a bunch of points on the field in that one. So I think this is right. I think A&M deserves to be the road favorite. Curious to see how Mike Elko handles that role with this team. But I think this is right. I think it's the right move for sure.
Another big move. And I had to double check that I wrote this down accurately. So BYU last week was a road favorite at Iowa State. They go out, they beat Utah as a 3.5, 4-point home dog. And now they're catching about 2.5, 3 against Iowa State. Now, the one thing I do need to check on, Adam, is the health status for Iowa State. They lost their two top corners. They've been super banged up. They're coming off a bye here. I'm intrigued by Iowa State, but I'll be honest, I've been kind of low on BYU this year. And thankfully, I didn't bet Utah this past week. I did bet on Arizona 2 weeks ago. This is obviously a letdown spot du jour for BYU, but you know, I give Kalani Sitake a lot of credit. This team loses their starting quarterback over the summer. They're now 7-0. Tricky spot to go to Ames here as a 2.5-point dog, but is this an overreaction? I don't know what it would be overreacting to. Maybe the letdown spot?
Well, I mean, you know, you look at the box score for the game between BYU and Utah in the Holy War, and Utah -2 in turnover margin, one fumble, one pick, but also they turned it over on downs 4 times in that game. So Utah outgained them 470 to 368. Utah was the better team in that game, just not able to convert on fourth down, and then had the two turnovers while BYU didn't have any giveaways. So that's part of it. You know, I talk about this a lot, and it's a very important, you know, part of updating my power ratings is box score study. You know, the final score doesn't tell you the whole story more often than not in these games. And so, well, at least in the close games. So yeah, this is one where Utah was clearly the better team. And to your point, I think people have been pretty skeptical of BYU throughout. I mean, close win over Colorado, close win at Arizona, close win to Utah. You kind of think that that's going to kind of level out a little bit, regression to the mean in close games. But then also, they got pretty badly outgained and pretty badly outplayed for long stretches of that one. So I think it makes sense, especially with an Iowa State team that is coming off the bye, is healthier. That being said, I mean, I don't know if I'm interested in Iowa State here. I have BYU 3.5-point favorite in this game. So I'd be on BYU or nothing, even though I can understand why there's a lot of regression signs in their profile and why people are looking to go against them.
I believe now after Georgia Tech got the win and cover, I believe the unranked favorite versus the ranked team is now 5-3 on the year. So we'll keep an eye on that. I know a lot of people like those spots. Adam, before we wrap things up here, as you wrote in your column, anything jump out midweek for you from a betting standpoint as we got games Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week?
Yeah, the Conference USA. How exciting. 2 more weeks of the Conference USA stuff, and then we get Maction to start off November. So I think the Kennesaw State line's gotten a little bit high now. 3-point road favorite at Pitbull Stadium against FIU. I like the Panthers a little bit in that one. I liked FIU a lot last week against Western Kentucky. I don't know what the hell that was from Western Kentucky last week. Just awful.
Does anyone want to win that conference?
I probably not. Just an awful performance from Western Kentucky there. I have Delaware a much bigger favorite against Middle Tennessee than where the line is right now. I'm actually surprised to see it moving against me. I think Middle Tennessee is one of the worst teams in FBS. And Delaware, while they can't seem to win games, and maybe their defense isn't very good, they put up massive passing yard numbers in most of their games. So I'll be on Delaware. I'll be laying the favorite price there after playing a lot of dogs in Conference USA last week. Missouri State's got injury questions at the quarterback position. Nothing on Thursday. Friday is interesting. The Cal and Virginia Tech game, I'm right on the market at 4. But Cal has not been a team that people have liked a lot here recently. They've been dropping in power ratings pretty quickly. Yet this line moved down a little bit with the cross-country travel on a Friday night. So that's one where I think the market's kind of telling us, the early week market, that Cal is the right side, but not a game I'm going to play. So right now, just FIU and Delaware for me in the weekday games.
Yeah, we got to keep an eye, too, on JKS, Jaron Kiave Sangapulateli, his status. He left the UNC game. By the way, talk about a brutal way to lose. UNC going into the end zone, fumbles a step away from taking the lead and winning that game. They did get the cover. Friday night dogs were 3-1, Louisville being the big one, pulling the outright upset there over Miami. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Couple more still to come this week. Wednesdays with Wes, Brett Ciancia, Matt Humans, and I breaking it down later on this week. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Wyatt, our producer. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And just a reminder, too, every episode up on YouTube as well. College Football Betting Podcast there on YouTube. That's going to do it. We'll be back later this week with another VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.